Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Georgia's Top CPAs, brought to you by Kilpatrick Advisors.
And thank you for listening. This is Steve Kilpatrick. I have our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, here, and we have a special episode for you this morning. We have international tax expert and CPA Mark Schwartz here. It's been a very eventful week. As many of you know, we've had several events overseas in France. We have, I guess, some events last night. And so Mark is going to be here to discuss immigration and tax policy and international affairs. And Mark, glad to have you here today.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the invitation.
You're welcome. So let me just give you the bio, and then Ryan and I will talk for a second. Mark Schwartz is the owner and CEO of Schwartz International here in Atlanta. Mark has lived and worked in the United States and abroad in both governmental and private sector roles. His diversified experience has allowed him to bring a global perspective to the business. He holds a BA from Colgate University, master's in international affairs from Columbia University, and a law degree from Emory University. He's also a CPA. Mark began his career in the Big Six here in Atlanta. He built a strong foundation in federal, state, and local international tax over several years for both individual and corporate clients. He transferred to the firm's Mexico City office and developed an expertise in Latin America tax to supplement his European, Asian, and U.S. tax base. He built on this experience when he was sent to help develop the firm's Miami-based business. And in Miami, he developed additional experience with inbound investment to the United States. Mark's geographically diverse client base has allowed him to gain significant experience with tax treaties, outbound and inbound planning, repatriation, foreign tax credits, real estate investments, branch taxes, and audit defense. He has taught a graduate-level international tax course at the Universidad Panamericana in Mexico City. Today, he continues to lecture on international tax issues, and he also writes for various trade publications. Mark is fluent in Spanish, so you are the perfect guest to speak about immigration and tax policy.
Well, I hope so. As I say, anyone can look good on paper.
Okay, so. Right. Well, hopefully you can recite some words for us in Spanish, too, and our listeners out there.
So,
Ryan, you had a special week last Friday. You were in Cobb County at bright and early 5 in the morning.
Yes, we had Business Radio X on location with Booth 61 and Mr. Ricky Steele for the Georgia CIO of the Year Awards winner. And so great morning of breakfast and networking with some of the big movers and shakers in the CAIO suites here in the Georgia area. So wonderful. Yeah.
Great. And you had a good Veterans Day?
Veterans Day was great. Went out and got a free haircut and a free sandwich and couldn't be happier. So thank you to all of the folks out there who sent joy and wishes my way, as well as to all the other veterans out there.
Super. Yep. Terrific. All right. Well, so let's just talk about, so we're going to talk about several things. We're going to talk about issues overseas. We're going to talk about France. We're going to talk about Swiss bank scandals. Let's talk a little about London. Maybe talk a little bit about the mayor over there, Boris Johnson, right? And so where do you want to start? Why don't you tell us first a little bit about yourself and your firm and what your firm does specifically?
Well, our firm, which we formed about 10 and a half years ago, is a boutique global tax advisory firm. What I noticed in my former life in the Big Six, Big Four accounting firms is a lot of the big name Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies had great advisors and had budgets to get great international tax advice. But the amorphous middle market and individuals didn't always have that budget or the expertise at smaller firms to get the substantive global tax advice and the practical advice that they needed. So we formed this firm in large part to work with that middle market and high net worth individuals. And what we focus is on practical just practical, how do we get things done and how do we stay out of trouble?
International tax consulting for any country or anywhere around the world. Is that right?
Absolutely. About half of our clients are U.S.-based individuals or companies with what we call outbound investment to non-U.S. regions, and the other half are foreign individuals and foreign companies investing into the U.S.
And who are some of your biggest referrals out there? How does business find you these days?
A lot of it, frankly, is from CPA firms and law firms. We've been able to develop a reputation over the past 10 years that we're good teammates. I say that we play well in the sandbox with others. So when we develop relationships with other CPAs and lawyers, and we like to say when people are comfortable in their own skin, they're willing to ask for help. So a lot of our clients are CPA firms and law firms that recognize that they may not have the in-depth international tax expertise to appropriately serve their clients. And so they will bring us in. And by the way, we practice what we preach. We're really good at two things. We're really good at international tax, and we're really good at saying, I don't know if it's not the right answer. So as an example, if I've got a client with a really specific, we had someone with a really specific state and local telecommunications issue. Well, that's not me. So I brought in an expert. I let the client know. Client's happy because that client knows I'm not BSing the client. My colleague's happy that I'm bringing him in.
Right.
So, and so it's really a love fest. So we really practice what we preach. The bottom line is the client comes first. And we need to make sure the clients get the information that they need so they can make appropriate business decisions.
It seems like the world is getting a lot smaller every day, doesn't it?
It sure is. It sure is.
Especially with the mergers. I mean, there was big medical. Was it Allergan?
And Pfizer.
Yep.
It's been in the paper a lot with these, due to the inversions or the anti-inversion legislation that not so much Congress now, it's more the IRS trying to strengthen via regulations.
Right. So what's the tax consequence in a lot of these?
Well, so here's what happens. Let me take a step back. If you're a U.S. company and you own, and let's just say 100% ownership, foreign subsidiaries, there's certain types of income that those foreign subsidiaries can earn, generally passive income, which is taxed in the U.S. to the U.S. owner, even if that cash is not distributed to the U.S. It's in the broad-based anti-deferral rules. There's also exceptions. You know, Congress, in its infinite wisdom, has exceptions and then exceptions to the exceptions. So what happens is that if you're a U.S.-headquartered multinational, there's significant rules you have to follow, and it's not always tax-driven. A lot of times, it's financial statement-driven. Okay. If a U.S. company on its U.S. financial statements has to record the U.S. tax cost of its foreign earnings, that can drive down earnings per share. It impacts bonuses, things like that. So companies have...
When you say financial statement earnings, you mean primarily like balance sheet or cash flow
balance
statement?
Balance sheet income statement, absolutely. Okay. So under U.S. GAAP.
Okay, gotcha.
So for tax planning, for instance, you may have the Googles and the Microsofts of the world with significant, let's say, operations in Ireland, with significant substance there.
Ireland,
thousands,
big country for mergers, right?
And their substance there. They've got millions of dollars of payroll, decision making authority. And when you have a significant amount of substance in those foreign companies, the earnings of those companies are not taxed in the U.S. until distributed in many cases.
Okay, all
right. And so that's one area that you get. And so what some people do is they say, well, we don't want to deal with these rules at all. Can we do an inversion? In other words, is there a way for us not to become a U.S. company or not to stay a U.S. company or to extract from underneath the U.S. company all our foreign companies so that those earnings are no longer subject to the U.S. tax net? And so Congress has proposed some rules, the anti-inversion rules, I believe, in the Tax Act of 2004. And recently, under the Obama administration, a couple years ago, there were some additional regulations and rules put out there, some notices, and just yesterday, some additional rules were issued by the Treasury Department. And Treasury Secretary Liu, I heard an interview with him this morning, and with a competing radio station, NPR. Sorry to mention the competition here, but
we're not threatened by them over here. They're okay with us. Yeah.
So I just mentioned, he said, "Hey, Congress, get your act together. I can only do so much at Treasury in terms of regulatory authority and issuing regulations. Congress, get off your backside, show some leadership, and let's get this done." And what I wish he would have said was, let's stop the piecemeal approach, Congress. Let's have comprehensive, practical tax reform that just makes sense. The piecemeal approach is not working. And one more thing, and I promise I'll be quiet and let you ask your next question, is Congress is passing these rules without really knowing what they're doing in many cases. A lot of the folks aren't reading legislation. A lot of folks aren't tax experts in Congress, and they're relying on some of their staffs who may not be tax experts. So the burden's falling on the IRS. Well, if you haven't picked up a newspaper in a while, the IRS's budget is being slashed. And so the IRS is under-resourced. Morale is at an all-time low, from what I understand. And yet the IRS is being asked to promulgate these substantive regulations to enforce the rules. Oh, and by the way, there's some tiny little law that came out a couple years ago called the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
Obamacare.
Sure. Yeah, I think we heard of that.
Well, the IRS is also being asked to handle that.
Yes.
And so while I certainly don't have a love affair with the IRS, I do feel bad for the IRS because they're completely understaffed, under-moraled, outgunned. And frankly, I think it's Congress's fault that's put them in this position. If we could get some comprehensive tax reform that's simplified, and hey, if it meant that I were out of a job, I can cook a mean burger, so I could open up a restaurant somewhere.
Right, okay. Certainly, yeah, you can sail into the sunset and enjoy the rest of your career. But you're right, unless that happens here first on our soil, tax reform for international tax codes and dealing with those, I mean, there's quite a bit there. Where do you go to stay current and up to date with all the changes that are happening out there, both nationally and internationally?
You mean in addition to listening to Business Radio X?
That's right. Outside of here, of course, we are the most trusted resource for business professionals like yourself, but there's got to be either websites, or are you part of groups or peer-to-peer counseling that happens to stay up to date on all the changes?
You know, that's a great question. I read all the time, whether it's reading IRS notices, whether it's reading other practitioners' articles, whether it's staying up to breath via, let's say, RIA or CCH, all these, you know, all these big information services, they all keep merging and the name seems to change every other day, BNA or Bloomberg, whatever it's called today. But so a lot of reading, a lot of discussions. Our business is global, so I'm on the phone probably with at least three different countries a day. And these are people who I've known over the past 20 years. And so we talk about developments, we talk about practical business opportunities, tax strategies. And so a lot of it's just reading.
When communicating with these companies overseas, how do you manage your time and the time zone difference? I know that's got to be a challenge as well.
It's a lot of odd time phone calls.
Yeah, sure.
So we've had a couple transactions with Australia. You know, depending on where about, you know, we've had 14-hour differences. So sometimes I'm up really early, up really late. Mm-hmm. It just really depends. But we also, one of the things in our particular office that I like is I happen to speak Spanish.
Right.
So we do a lot of work with Spain, with Latin America. And I think even our clients who are fluent in English, if Spanish is their native language, they love to be able to speak in their native language. And whether we've got people on the staff from Germany, from France, from Korea, so we've got a lot of language capabilities, and we try to make it easy for our clients.
And for our listeners who may have just joined us, we're talking with Mark Schwartz. He's owner and CEO of Schwartz International. Steve, I think we got the right man in the seat today to talk about all these global tax issues that are happening out there.
All right, so let's talk about immigration for a minute here. So I have some strong opinions on this subject, and you know, I know we're talking about tax issues, so we'll talk about tax issues, but My ancestors were from Belfast originally, so came over in 1850, and not for tax reasons, I don't think, for different reasons.
Okay. Yeah, people generally don't move to the U.S. because they like the tax system.
Yeah, so you know, Kilpatrick, not Native American, but. What kind of tax issues are we dealing with? We have to address a tax issue here with legal, illegal immigration. What are the kind of issues that we have to deal with today in 2015 with different types of immigration? I mean, they have to be addressed. How do we address them today?
All right, let me try to answer your question by coming back to our friend Boris, the mayor of London,
sure,
for a minute.
Good one.
So the U.S. tax is based on citizenship. Almost every other country in the world does not. I think there might be one, I don't even remember which one, but it's not a big player. So if you're a U.S. citizen, you have to report your worldwide income, period, end of story. Now there's mechanisms, let's say a foreign earned income and housing exclusion or a foreign tax credit designed so that you're not paying tax twice on the same income, so you're not being double taxed. But you've got to file a U.S. tax return, and if you have foreign bank accounts, If the aggregate value is more than $10,000 in any day, you've got to disclose the existence of that account. If that account earns any income under U.S. principles, mm-hmm. that's got to be on your U.S. tax return.
Right.
So we had Boris, the mayor of London, come out, I want to say about a year ago. He said, I'm shocked. I just found out that because I'm a U.S. citizen, I have to do all of these things. What am I going to do? So we have a lot of folks in that position who are expats, or what we say, accidental Americans. Maybe your parents were on assignment mm-hmm. from a foreign country, and you were born in the U.S., and you moved back home when you were 2 years old, never set foot in the U.S. again, or maybe you did a semester here in high school. And all of a sudden, you say, wait a minute, I've lived in the U.K. or France or wherever my entire adult life. Why do I have to file a U.S. tax return? So that, number one, even pre-immigration, that's a surprise to many people.
Okay. And what did Boris do?
You know, I don't know what he did, but let me tell you what a lot of our clients do in that situation. The IRS has a program called the off, well, it has a couple programs. One is the Offshore Voluntary Disclosure Program, OVDP. And what they say is, hey, if you have not been compliant with regard to your international income reporting and or disclosure, mm-hmm. here's what you can do. You can file 8 years worth of back tax returns, eight years worth of foreign bank disclosures, pay whatever tax you owed. And frankly, most of our clients don't even owe that much tax because they get a large foreign tax credit. But the kicker is during that 8-year period, you look at what's the maximum value of your foreign bank accounts during that period. And you pay either, depending on whether you have any banks on a tainted list, 27.5% penalty of your maximum value, or 50%. All right, so that's one program. But let me tell you what's punitive about that. So suppose year minus 8 was your biggest value, and let's say you had $5 million in foreign non-disclosed assets. So let's say that $5 million today, due to the economic downturn, is only $2.5 million. You might pay a 50% penalty on that $5 million, which last time I did my math, I don't have my calculator, but I think that's $2.5 million.
Yeah, give or take.
Well, that's almost all of what you got left, right?
Right. Yeah.
So it can become quite punitive. So that's one. Another one is called the Streamline Program, and maybe this is what Boris did. If you are considered non-willful, now remember, this is the IRS's terminology, so take off your hat that says I'm a normal, logical, rational human being, if you were in the first place, okay, and put on your I need to read the IRS rules hat. And non-willful is generally a good faith mistake, good faith misunderstanding of the law, and even negligence. So if you're one of these accidental Americans and you just didn't know you had to file, generally you can come under the Streamline Program, and there it's more straightforward. You file 3 years worth of tax returns,
okay,
3 years worth of bank disclosures, and there's zero penalty if you are resident outside the U.S.
The key words are good faith, right? Okay.
And
in other words, they're looking for people that are coming to them that are not committing fraud, that are trying to do the right thing.
And the U.S. wants them back in the compliance system.
Okay.
All right. So moving forward to someone who immigrates, okay?
Okay.
So someone who has, so suppose you're actually a U.S. resident and you haven't been compliant. You can still do the Streamline Program if you're non-willful, okay? But you do have a 5% penalty as opposed to 0% if you're a non-resident. But how can you live in the U.S. and be non-willful? Well, that's a good question. What I will tell you is that there are a lot of tax advisors out there that are not familiar with these rules. Okay?
I have never heard of these things before.
No, you're absolutely right. Yes. These are really so many deep layers of what's going on out there that only an expert like yourself could actually explain it in a way that the rest of us could understand.
We try.
Yeah.
We try. But so those are some of the things that you've got to worry about once you immigrate. But what else do you need to be concerned about? We work with a lot of people with pre-immigration. Suppose,
right. Okay. Pre-immigration, okay.
Suppose you're a Parisian.
Right.
You don't have a U.S. green card. You're not a U.S. citizen.
Okay.
And you own several different companies outside of the U.S. Well, because the U.S. taxes its residents on worldwide income, when you become a U.S. resident, all of those subsidiaries underneath you mm-hmm. are now all of a sudden under the U.S. tax net. Mm-hmm. So suppose you earned $1 million in your foreign subsidiaries that are still sitting in the belly of your retained earnings in your foreign subsidiaries. Mm-hmm. You become a U.S. resident. 5 years later, you distribute that cash. Well, That's taxable in the U.S. You will say, well, wait a minute. I wasn't even a U.S. person when they earned them, right? Yeah, right. So there's certain pre-immigration planning, all legitimate. But again, most importantly, we just want our clients to be aware of the rules so there's no unexpected consequences. Right? Right. It's like my 15-year-old just got her learner's permit, and we're driving. And what I work with her is, let's not create uncertainty. You know, if you're going to make that right turn on red, go for it and make sure there's enough space. But if you kind of go sort of halfway, you're creating uncertainty and it's dangerous for everybody involved in the intersection. True. So what I don't want my clients to have uncertainty. I want them to know what are all the reasonable options, mm-hmm. what are the pros and cons of each option, and help them make their own decisions.
Okay. Right. Okay. Let's take a look at another demographic here.
You mean you didn't want to talk about my daughter driving more?
I like the example. No,
I'm glad you're the guy in the seat, not me.
Yeah. How about the Syrian refugee, the legal applicant for immigration status?
Mm-hmm.
What is their tax? I know that's not a potential, or a typical client for you, but I don't know what is tax.
No, it's really interesting because we are not immigration lawyers. We work with a lot of immigration lawyers with folks who are coming to the U.S. But it's interesting. I think it was the governor of Alabama the other day saying, well, we want tougher guidelines, was one of the several governors.
Right.
Saying, we want tougher guidelines on immigrants from Syria because we want to make sure that they're not terrorists. And I just wanted to take a step back and say, I'm hoping that we're doing appropriate screening of everybody and anybody who wants to immigrate.
Absolutely right. No matter what country they're from, how old they may be, male or female, certainly a good vetting of each individual when they come to America on a vacation or here to live.
And to be fair, apparently the administration does have a good vetting process. What they're telling us, hey, we're a country of immigrants, right?
That's right.
So I think we need to find the right balance between how are we open and what are we doing to make sure that not just, hey, as my partner likes to say, you can be a jerk whether you were born here or not, right? So we have our own homegrown folks that we've got our own issues with. So but the bottom line is just trying to bring it back to tax before I get in more trouble than I'm probably already in, is whether you come from Syria or Belgium or France or Mali, where there was another terrorist attack a few hours ago, or Japan or wherever, you're going to be subject to worldwide taxation if you become a U.S. tax resident.
Okay.
And so that means reporting your worldwide income.
Right.
It also means information disclosure. It goes back to foreign bank accounts. And hey, is your foreign bank account a foreign mutual fund? Because if it's a foreign mutual fund, I know, Steve, that a lot of your clients are individuals that may be business owners.
That's right.
And they may have direct foreign investments, whether in companies or they may just, as opposed to putting money, let's say, in Schwab that invests in a foreign mutual fund, they might go directly into a foreign mutual fund. That has different income reporting and disclosure.
The Patriot Act covers if they're coming from Ireland or England or Spain or France, Germany, right? There are laws in the Patriot Act that cover how they monitor that. And I don't know exactly how they work, but they are.
Now, I have a question about a business here in America that may be thinking about expanding internationally. Is now a good time, from your professional opinion, to look into that? And if so, what are some of the steps that you want to make sure they take before expanding into other international locations?
If in doubt, deduct it. No, I'm just kidding. what I would say is, that's happening more and more because there's a lot of U.S. companies that are finding that the U.S. market is saturated or coming close to saturated for their product. So we see more clients than ever who are, for the very first time, whether it's exporting, whether it's opening a branch office in a foreign country. And what I always tell folks is you're much better off investing the time and effort to get it right the first time than to try to get yourself out of a jam.
Right. So coming to see you to prevent certain things coming up is better than trying to cure them once they've already happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the old Fram commercial, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. And it doesn't have to be me, whoever they go. They need to go to a competent global tax advisor.
There you go.
And so some of those things that they need to think about is, well, how is that foreign jurisdiction going to tax me? Or is it in a position where it even can tax me? Because just because you're doing business or have activities in a foreign country doesn't mean that that country can automatically tax you. Mm-hmm. Do we have a tax treaty with that country? Are we able to claim benefits under that tax treaty?
You mentioned tax treaties. How many countries do we have tax treaties with, or what percentage of countries would you say?
We have income tax treaties with all of our major trading partners.
Okay.
One trading partner that we don't have a treaty with is Brazil.
Really?
A huge country.
Yeah, a huge country. Brazil. Well, actually, let me take this. It's not just Brazil, but Brazil does some interesting things that make us not have a treaty. But frankly, Latin America, we only have treaties ratified with two countries. Mexico and Venezuela. And ever since Chavez had come to power and now his replacement, that treaty is really not worth a whole bunch right now. And I'm sorry, I'm going to digress a little bit on tax treaties, because tax treaties are really important. And we do a lot of work in treaties, and we do so much work in treaties that sometimes clients will hire us to do work that's not even U.S. related. For instance, we had a client where we helped them get a big refund for an issue under the Canada-UK treaty. They were under an audit in Canada, and we just thought the Canadian Revenue Authority had the wrong reasoning and interpretation of a transaction, and we were able to get our client a lot of money back under that treaty. We have a treaty negotiated and signed with Chile, but there is one senator, Rand Paul, in the Senate. He has not allowed a vote on a treaty to be ratified in the Senate, I want to say in the past 5 years. So we've got a lot ready to go. We've got treaties that have been modified, protocols to treaties, treaty with Chile, ready to go. And U.S. businesses are screaming, hey, let's get these treaties ratified, because a tax treaty, well, it does not always reduce the rate of tax. It provides certainty. And that's what business owners want. They want just more certainty. If I earn $100 in country X, how much do I have left after paying global taxes on it?
The only thing stopping that is some people stonewalling in Washington, I guess.
Why would he not want a treaty to go through?
I don't know for certain. Some of the reading that is out there, it says that he's concerned. Well, in addition to tax treaties, and this will help answer the question, we have something called Social Security treaties.
Okay.
Which the goal of those was, suppose you work 25 years in Belgium and 25 years in the U.S., and you might not qualify for Social Security in either country.
Okay.
But if you total your time together, they call them totalization agreements. If you total your time together, you will qualify.
Okay.
And so you can get benefits. But there's also related issues under those treaties. Maybe you get assigned as an expat to country X.
All right.
But if it's only for a few years, you don't have to pay into that Social Security system, and you can continue to pay into the U.S. system. But there is concern about the latest article I read, that he was concerned about Mexican immigration, and that, you know, having certain treaties out there is going to increase immigration from Mexico.
Okay, so
illegal as well, or make certain illegal. It's all tied in the immigration.
So the trade issue is tied into an immigration.
Yeah,
issue?
Yeah. We could talk about immigration policy and things like that for days, but you really have to ask his office for the details. Oh. But the bottom line is, it's my understanding he's the one holding this up.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sorry, I don't mean he's holding up a vote. I mean, I'm assuming that these treaties would get ratified if they were up for a vote, but there's no guarantee on that. But it's not even getting to a vote, and
right.
That's the issue that a lot of business owners have, is, hey, put it up to a vote, because then it'll create some certainty.
Caught up in the red tape of Washington.
Well, that's interesting.
It is.
Hey, let me mention one other thing, if you don't mind, when we talk about people with foreign bank accounts.
Sure.
Based on FATCA, the Foreign Accounting and Tax Compliance Act that the U.S. came out with a couple years ago, it requires foreign banks to disclose who their U.S. account holders are.
Okay.
And as a result, there's a lot of foreign banks that have just kicked out their U.S. account holders. And so I don't know if any of you, for instance, if your clients have seen that.
I know I'm going to get a couple calls from clients after the show's over. Oh, you dummy, I've already told you this.
Because what happens is these banks say, hey, I don't want to comply with these U.S. rules. And as long as I don't have any U.S. account holders, I don't have to deal with as much red tape as I would have. So if you're an account holder, let me know by date X, and I'm going to liquidate all your accounts, and here's your cash. So A, you have expats that may not have a bank account.
Right.
B, suppose you had a brokerage account in that foreign country. Well, they've got to sell the stock to get you the cash. Well, that's a taxable transaction. So, again, uncertainty. We just want some certainty, and I know I'm asking too much, but we just want some certainty.
Okay.
Makes perfect sense. And for those who may have joined us late, we're talking with Mark Schwartz. He is CEO and owner of Schwartz International, located right here in beautiful Sandy Springs, Georgia, since 2005. If you want to get some information from them directly, you can call them at 404-236-9829 or email him at mschwartz@schwartzintl.com. So again, Steve, the topics we're discussing here today, the caliber of guests that you're able to get on this program has just been a high value to all of our listeners, supporters. I'm certain of it.
Thanks, appreciate it, Mark. Let's talk about a little bit more about the Swiss bank scandals. Can you give us a little more detail about what was happening over there?
Well, there were some. I want to try to be objective here. There are always people willing to skirt the law, and so there were various banks, and it wasn't just Switzerland, that were allegedly encouraging U.S. persons and maybe some other persons from putting money in a non-U.S. bank account and perhaps not disclosing that income to the IRS. And let me actually take a step back from there. And it wasn't just a Swiss bank. There was a couple years before some of these rules came out where the U.S. really started enforcing very, very loudly these rules about disclosing foreign bank accounts. You had a guy working for a Liechtenstein bank, Liechtenstein financial institution, and I don't know exactly why or how. Maybe he was having a bad day. Something happened. He decided that he was going to download on a disk, you know, it was back when you used to have disks, right? The name of several, and I don't know how many dozens, if not more, German residents who had investments at this Liechtenstein trust, and he sold that to the German tax authorities.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And that, in turn, got sold to the tax authorities around the world. And that really was, in my mind, the impetus for a lot of these rules that are out now.
Was that on 60 Minutes?
It may be. I'm forgetting the person's name, and I've done speeches on this guy several times, so I shouldn't be forgetting his name. But he apparently is in hiding. I don't know, maybe he's on a beach somewhere in Thailand. But he's in hiding, apparently being paid for by the German Ministry of Finance and maybe other tax authorities around the world, and it led to a lot of arrests around the world for people who were just hiding money. Mm-hmm. So going back to the Swiss bank was the U.S. Department of Justice was going to pursue charges against a lot of these Swiss banks. And again, not every Swiss bank was involved in this, okay? But Swiss got the bad rap at first. There's banks all over the world.
I mean, we read about it, but I remember originally seeing him in person on a film. It was one news crew that actually met him in person and mm-hmm. seeing him. And it was one crew that saw it, and you can find it on your phone, but they just, and he met them.
Right.
And it was just like, he was like, hi, how are you? Good to see you.
Right.
And it was the only crew that did it.
Did he have a good suntan?
He was so relaxed. I mean, it was just like,
he's like,
you know,
the Edward Snowden of international tax laws.
What was it, Citizen 4? Have you all seen Citizen 4?
Exposed what was going on at certain levels that the rest of us had no idea.
Yeah, Citizen 4, they were in Edward Snowden's hotel room while the whole thing was going on. They were just sitting there with Edward, you know, just talking to him while the whole episode was breaking. It's an amazing documentary. Sorry.
And that actually raises a good point. I don't think that there is any more legal hiding of anything anymore. I think everything is transparent. And that goes back to a little bit more of our firm's work. Most of our work, when we get a brand new client, we need to do due diligence. And we often find exposure. And why is that? Because most of our clients have not had international tax specialists. And when I mean specialists, I'm talking someone who's doing 85, 90% or more of his or her work just on global tax.
Right.
And so we'll end up finding exposure and making sure that we then address that exposure and build a strong foundation and then do legitimate tax planning on top of that strong foundation. Mm-hmm. If you do tax planning on top of a shaky foundation, I'm not doing that planning.
Right.
So I just wanted to mention that, and it's nothing against any of the CPA firms. As I said earlier, when we're not experts in a certain area, we call in the reinforcements and we'll let the client know that we're not experts and make introductions again to make sure the client is taken care of.
Sure. I'll bet. So, Okay, so I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, though, but as far as...
the Swiss bank accounts or offshore accounts, all common people say, well, you can hide your money in these places, but you can't do that anymore. The legal places to do it are few and far between.
Well, and the other thing is that it's not illegal to have a foreign bank account.
It just seems shady to the layperson, though.
Right, but think about it. I'm not a financial advisor.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with diversifying your portfolio.
No.
And there's two ways to do it. One is you put all your money in a U.S. fund that invests outside the U.S., or you could go straight to a foreign bank. As long as you disclose the account, you're okay.
Do those accounts end up being closed down, though?
What happens is a lot of these banks had to pay massive fines or decided to pay massive fines as opposed to getting...
Right. Right. So it certainly is great information for people to keep so they know going forward if they have ideas of moving to another country or getting a business or investing. I mean, all these we've talked about here today can be provided for you there at Schwartz International.
Well, think about also, so suppose I'm making this up, but so suppose that you grew up in the U.S. and your wife is from Paris and her family's in Paris. And you go there 2, 3, 4 times a year with the kids because you want to see the family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's easier to have a bank account there in Paris. So you go there, you go to the ATM, you take out money, you don't have to worry about it. So it's very common. You don't have to be wealthy to have a non-U.S. account that has to be disclosed. But whether you've got an account with $20,000 in it or $2 million in it, if you haven't disclosed the account and you haven't disclosed related income, you're subject to the same U.S. rules.
Right. Makes sense.
So these are not just high net worth individual problems.
What about I have some clients that have... had problems in the past, and they don't seem to have problems that much anymore. But, you know, after September 11th, they really tightened down on having investment accounts in different countries, and it seems to have relaxed a lot more in recent years. How have you seen tax laws change in the last few years for regular investors?
Well, let me try to answer your question this way. I see more and more countries trying to adopt tax laws that are closer to the U.S. model.
Okay.
As in,
you've seen it change more toward the U.S. model?
Yes. As in, we're getting more sophisticated. A lot of countries used to be more form over substance in terms of a transaction. The U.S. has for a long time been substance over form primarily. And so we see more countries getting more substance over form. And but in terms of tax, you know, taxation of investors is relatively the same. I mean, we always hear the big one for the investment bankers and the private equity guys. You know, carried interest that should be at preferential rates, and you know that continues to be an argument. But the bottom line I would say to any investor is just consult your advisor as to what needs to be disclosed. It's not illegal to have a foreign account, but just make sure you disclose it if you meet the monetary thresholds.
Well, see, I'll tell you, I think, is there anything that is special that you would say that you bring to the table that in particular in specialty that any of your competition might not bring?
He speaks Spanish.
There's that.
Yeah, right.
What we try to do different, and again, I can't so much comment on what other firms do, just
that you
see
focus
what
on
we
that.
See in terms of what we think may differentiate us, is that we really look at the global transactions. And let me give you an example. We have a lot of CPA firms that use us maybe because you've got a client that invests in U.S. real property.
Right.
Well, yeah, I can read the Internal Revenue Code, another CPA, or you guys can read the Internal Revenue Code and say, well, what's the U.S. tax on these earnings? Well, suppose I got a client from Paris or from wherever. What I like to do is make sure I understand who is that client, what are that client's objectives and goals. And frankly, if that client invests $100 in the U.S. or $100 million in the U.S., where does that client want the earnings? Back in Paris? Well, maybe that client wants those earnings to fund his company in jurisdiction X. So what I do is I work with a global approach to say, hey, you earn $100 in the U.S. and you want the after-tax earnings to be over here. So after this investment, what's your global after-tax cash flow? And I would say a lot of, I don't see a lot of firms out there doing that with the middle market and the high net worth individuals. And there's also a misnomer. My partner and mentor used to give me grief on this. The U.S. tax code, the Internal Revenue Code, has provisions for when you're dealing with international stuff, term of art, right? When you're dealing with international stuff, that's in the Internal Revenue Code. That's domestic law. That's domestic tax. So what we try to set ourselves is we think that we're true international or global tax practitioners. So we're certainly not experts in the technical rules of every other country. But we know enough to do preliminary planning, and we have people that we've worked with that I've worked. I mean, I'm the baby of our management team, and I've got 20 years of experience. So I have 20 years worth of relationships with people around the globe that we team with, and we also are not married to anybody in another country. So if we don't like the answer from someone A, not if we don't like the answer because if we don't think it's correct, they know that we're going to go across the hall. So they know us well enough that they anticipate our questions, and we can diplomatically push back. And what we tell them is no is not an answer. Hey, if a client wants to go from A to Z directly, they might not be able to do that. But find me a way that's legitimate and reasonable. They might have to go to A to B to C and then to Z. But that's, I think, what we set ourselves apart is really a true global approach. We always let our clients know what's your global after-tax cash flow, not just what's the U.S. side.
Well, I'll tell you, Mark, especially with all the events of this week, you are the go-to guy. And we really appreciate you coming on the show. Your expertise is amazing. Especially in the areas of tax, international tax, and I appreciate your perspective on world events.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Hopefully, I've kept people awake. I guess we'll find out.
Right. Please do remind our listeners how they can find out more information about yourself or your organization.
So you can look at our website, www.schwartzintl, S-C-H-W-A-R-T as in Thomas, Z-I-N as in Nancy, T as in Thomas, L is in Lima, schwartzintl.com, and 404-236-9829.
And you're on LinkedIn, Mark, M-A-R-C, L Schwartz, and then there's Facebook as well, Schwartz International as well.
Yeah, all over the social media stratosphere. So we encourage our listeners to go out there and link up with them there. So again, thank you so much, Mark, for taking time out of your busy schedule. If we can help you here on Top CPAs even further or our Business Radio X, please let us know. We'd be more than happy to have you back in the studio. And we'd be remiss, too, if we didn't thank Mr. Steve Kilpatrick from Kilpatrick Advisors. If you need information about their services, you can find them at the Pinnacle Building there in Buckhead, Peachtree Road, or call them directly at 404-889-8000. So thank you so much, Steve, for making this show happen.
Thank you, Ryan, and thanks for everyone for listening.
This show is brought to you by Kilpatrick Advisors. Goal-focused, plan-driven, Kilpatrick Advisors. Learn more at www.kilpatrickadvisors.com. Stephen Kilpatrick is registered with and securities are offered through Investacorp Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer member, FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Investacorp Advisory Services Incorporated, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. The opinions contained in this broadcast are those of Stephen Kilpatrick and not of Investacorp. The information provided is intended for general information purposes only and is not intended to provide specific investment advice or recommendations for any individual. It is suggested that you consult with your financial professional regarding your individual situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results.